Monday, ladies and gentlemen. This is Rob, host of Shut Up and Grind. This is episode number 301. If you're brand new to the show, we're all about overcoming obstacles, defying the odds, and helping you clear whatever is blocking the path to the success that you want in this lifetime. So please like, share, subscribe, all that good stuff. So we're live streaming to 6 different platforms, and it'll be on all of the podcast platforms after that. So today, we are talking about how to triumph over your challenges, because everybody struggles with something at some point. And I bring guests from all over the world, 6 different continents, countless countries, and they share their stories of overcoming. So my guest today is Kaylee Z. that was the last question I asked before I hit go live, and I still messed it up. Sorry about that. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. It's awesome.
Glad to have you. Where are you joining me from?
Right now I'm in New York.
Oh, you're in New York. Okay, I'm up here in Rhode Island.
Oh, okay. Nice. Awesome.
Nice. You always from the Northeast?
No, I'm originally from California.
Oh, okay.
Originally California, and I was living in Israel for 7 years.
Okay.
And I came here on a trip to visit friends, and I met my husband the day I landed. So we're here.
Wow. All right. Take me through that meeting.
Oh, you just opened everything in like 1 second. How did you do that? That was impressive. But you know what? That's the divine, because how we met had to have been like divinely orchestrated, because it's such a profound experience. So I'm like, where do I begin? So we met at someone's dinner table. I can't even say friends, because I didn't really know these people. I had started having like dreams and visions that I was going to be here in New York, for the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year.
Okay.
And I, at the time, was living in Israel on the beach, like just stunning, amazing, great life. And I was like, no, I don't want to be in New York. Like, sorry, New Yorkers, let's get real. Like, hello, weather. I was just like, no. But these visions kept coming. I was like, okay, fine, I guess I'm going. So I called a friend of mine from California, right? Known her for years. That's where I grew up. I'm going to be in the East Coast. I'm going to be in America. I decided, okay, I'm booking. There's some message coming through. Don't ignore it. Go.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, I'm going to be there. So I call her and I say, this is my plan. Why don't you meet me? We haven't seen each other. Why don't you meet me? She says, let's go to Massachusetts. Like, okay. I anyways didn't want to go to New York. Why are you taking me to Massachusetts? And here's the thing, like, as I'm sharing this, I just want you all to know, we all have these moments. We all have these moments where something sounds totally crazy, totally insane. Why is someone telling me to do that? Like, what? Like, but if we can just trust and listen and realize I'm not in control, I'm not in charge, magic unfolds. And like, then the creator can actually be a lot more creative with us, right?
Absolutely.
So I think she's totally nuts. And I tell her, okay, fine, let me check my flight. If it's not more, I'll go in first to Massachusetts.
Okay.
And I'm thinking that's my out. No, it was cheaper. I was like, okay, I'm going to this tiny little town. We went to this tiny little town, Westboro, Massachusetts, to meet the Green family, who I had been following online. But okay, it's one thing to like follow someone online. You don't show up in their house. Okay. I thought she was nuts. I remember telling her, like, I was like, you're crazy. What are you thinking? And she's insisting that we go there. Fine. Like, we're going for 1 weekend and then we make it to New York. Okay. That was our deal. So I'm at the dinner table. We're there. We're spending the weekend with these people. We're having a traditional like Jewish Sabbath dinner. And the rabbi says, Kaylee, we're so honored to have you here. And I'm going, what? Like, why do they know anything about me? Like, what's going on? Right. And he's like, we'd be honored if you share your story. All right. So I told you, you're asking me, walk me through that meeting. I told you, you opened this, right?
It's all good.
I was like, you just nailed it. I don't know how you did that. You have a gift. You have a gift.
Skills.
Yeah, seriously. You've been doing this long enough, right?
Yeah.
So I'm at dinner and I'm like, I share my story a lot. I'm still feeling like put on the spot. Like, what is happening? I mean, like, what? Okay. So I start sharing about how I was diagnosed with MS when I was 12. So I told you, went right for it, right? I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis when I was 12 years old. I start sharing a bit about those, the challenges of growing up with illness, and that journey. And then how in my 20s, I made a decision that I was going to heal. I made a decision. I could not continue to live with illness every day. You don't know what symptoms are coming. Can you plan? Like, you're balancing medications and specialists. And it just, it goes without saying, it's a really, really hard life.
Yes.
And I just came to this place of like, no, enough is enough. Like, I can't do this anymore. Now, I didn't know what that would mean. I didn't know what that looked like. I just had some voice in me that believed that healing was possible, that the same body that creates human life must be able to repair. So I made that decision. So I'm sharing all of this at the dinner table. Okay. Yeah. Going, I didn't even want to be in America right now. What is going on? Right. Okay, fine. I'm sharing. And someone at the table asks a phenomenal question. They say, if there's scar tissue on the brain, that's what MS is, multiple sclerosis, many scars. If there's scar tissue on the brain is the computer of the body. It manages everything. Yeah. If there's scar tissue on the brain, how could the body heal? How could you still function? Excellent question, right? Mm. And some guy, the other side of the room, says neuroplasticity. And I'm thinking, nobody ever knows that word. Like, who just said that? And I'm kind of like looking around over here and I'm like, who's that guy? What's going on, right? And I was thinking, this is interesting. Okay. And I'm in the middle of the story. And so someone asks this question and I'm about to answer. And he answers, what is neuroplasticity? So for those listening, neuroplasticity essentially means that our brain is plastic. It can mold, it can learn, it can adjust. So if the nerves that control our walking, which this is millions of nerves, so we're just to give you a perspective, okay? If there's scar tissue on those nerves, so a message is not getting there directly, the brain will find a workaround. Okay, it is going to try to work around it. Now, how do we use mind-body medicine to then help it? We help it find those workarounds. So why does someone who's, how come I lived with disease for 18 years and sometimes it didn't find a workaround, right? So without realizing it, our mental state and the work that we're doing throughout the day-to-day life.
Oh no, not again. Come back.
What happened?
There we go. Yeah, you froze for a second there.
Oh, I had no idea. Okay. I was just going on and on. Where did you lose me?
He was answering the question about what is neuroplasticity.
What is neuroplasticity? Did you hear me explain what neuroplasticity is?
I heard yours, yes.
Okay, perfect. Okay. So he's explaining it and I'm just like, who is this person, right? So now I'm just like, I got to get through this explanation as quickly as possible. I finished my story. All I want to do is talk to him. He felt the same way. So he moves his chair, comes, sits right across from me. And we are just in the same world of like, we're at the Sabbath dinner table in our community. We're both Orthodox Jews, okay? Mm-hmm. And what's called Hasidic Jews, okay? So we're speaking the same spiritual language. We're speaking the same science language, neuroscience. We're quoting all the same people. Mm. I'm just like, what is happening? So that's our first meeting, okay? And like, and he wasn't supposed to be there. They called him. They're close friends with him. He was living in New York at the time. They had an emergency. They're like, you got to come this weekend. He's like, no, I can't come this weekend. They're like, you got to come. So clearly we were supposed to be there. Yeah, and I had a flight back 2 weeks later. I just stayed. So
wow.
we started dating and quickly got engaged. And yeah, here we are today. That's how we started.
Look at that, huh? That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, all right, so let's circle back to you living with illness. So what was that like and how did it limit you?
Oh, wow. What was that like? Was really hard. That's like not even, there's not really a word to describe what was that like, especially being that, you know, at the time I was in middle school when I was diagnosed. So everything if you could imagine, there's literally no area of life it didn't affect. It affected how I went to the bathroom. It affected like just every area of my life. I was very blessed to be in an environment that, like a school setting that was very accommodating. So that gave me a lot of flexibility around homework and tests. And I had an out. I really didn't have to show up. But I felt very strongly I still wanted to be in life. And I wanted to do my best to feel as normal as possible. So that meant I needed a lot of flexibility on, you know, taking tests in different ways that affected my cognition. It affected everything. I mean, I missed a ton of school. They basically just had to be like, what, like, just give me an open door policy, show up when I can. Mm-hmm. Again, extremely limiting. There were times I was in a wheelchair. I've been blind in one eye. There have been times when all my internal organs shut down. It's the brain. Oh. It controls everything, right? And even in times when I may have looked fine and not had a symptom that was visible, there was something invisible. There was fatigue or pain. And we really have no idea. We're all walking around. You have no idea what someone is dealing with. They could look totally fine, you know, but they might be in excruciating pain. Their legs might be on fire. I can't tell you, you know, it's not the days, the weeks, the months I lived like that. Or they're experiencing extreme fatigue. And it's like, it's sort of ironic, you know, you could be sitting next to someone at work who goes, oh yeah, I'm exhausted. I didn't sleep last night. Like, we can't fathom what that actually comes to, you know? Yeah. And it was a very interesting reality check for me actually recently. I just became a mom. So I've got a sweet little 6-month-old boy. He's incredible. And that's like a new level of exhaustion. And I think,
yeah, it is.
Right? Like,
been there.
Wow. And I think to myself, like, wait a second. Like, I used to live with disease. Like, how are people doing this with fatigue and a baby? Like, that was a huge wake up call to me of like the gift of health. There are still aspects of that I still haven't even realized because now I'm in a new phase of life. Right. So even before, as much as, you know, I was a public speaker from a young, young age, I wanted to share my story. I really believed that, not I believed, I experienced that with, you know, we say it's so cliche, like you don't know what you have until it's gone. Mm-hmm. Every day that I could see, every day that I woke up and something was functioning, something. Okay. It could be that, okay, I can't pee today, but hey, but I can see. Like, that was the level. That's where I was living at. I would be overjoyed that I could see. I would just be so grateful that I could walk. And all my values changed. I used to be like straight A student. All I cared about was doing well in school, which I know is weird for a middle schooler. I stopped caring. I just like, you know what? If I can see today, let's go to Disneyland. Let's go do something fun. Like, let's hang out with friends. Like, everything shifted for me. And so from a very young age, I started to share my story because I really believe that maybe someone else would be grateful for what they have without having to learn the hard way. You know, still sometimes we all have to learn the hard way, but you know, that's why I started to share it. And so it changed my life in every way you could imagine.
All right. So you said you decided that you were going to heal. Just walk me through that process.
Yeah, that's an extensive process. But, you know, first I had to learn about the body. I had to really, like, I feel like I had to get a PhD and just understanding how does the nervous system work? How does the immune system work? How does psychology work? And there's a field for this called psychoneuroimmunology. And it is the connection between the mind, the immune system, and the nervous system. And I immersed myself in that. And really wanted to understand everything I could about the mind and the body and that connection. And what I realized is that the body has to respond to all of our emotions, everything, joy, sadness, fear, anxiety, all of it, insecurity. It has to respond. It's built that way. It's built that way to protect us. So imagine that we're living out in the wild and you hear, like, you know, a rustle in the leaves, like, that could be a lion. You could be in danger. But I was sitting and enjoying the sun and just relaxing. How am I going to now run for my life? So that fear turns on the fight or flight response in the body. All of our mechanisms change. Okay. Every organ changes the way it functions so that I can run for my life. I can't do that when I'm just hanging out in the sun. I need my heart to beat way faster so I can run fast enough. Right.
Yeah.
We live in a world that everything is like the lion, right? I'm okay. I'm safe. There's a roof over my head. There's food on the table. But the news headline I read this morning about something happening on the other side of the world, my heart's racing. The brain doesn't know that's not happening to me. That's the same for the conflict with a friend, the regret from, you know, something I didn't do yesterday, or pain that, you know, the person who cut you off and you're upset driving on the freeway. That same mechanism is happening. And the body can only sustain that for so long. And so that was like my first, I had to understand all of that. And once you make a decision in life, the right teachers, the right guides present themselves, they show up. And so those teachers showed up, and I first had to learn how to get in touch with my body and understand, okay, so this pain, this symptom is processing an emotion that I missed. I didn't know it was there. What is that? And we don't have language for emotions. Everybody, it's like, I'm on the phone with people all the time talking to them about this journey and how to start the healing process. Everybody always says the same thing, but I'm so overwhelmed and anxious. It's the same words all the time. Overwhelmed, anxious, yeah. Stressed, maybe stress gets in there. We don't have nuance that there's so much more that the body's actually processing. Our emotions are actually much more intricate, but we never took time to be with them. So I learned slowly with time what my body was actually processing, and then went, oh, okay, so I guess there's something there I need to be with. And there are many, many tools for this. I started with one called Emotional Freedom Technique, EFT. It's also known as tapping, or, you know, people kind of recognize it like this. Or you don't recognize it and you should go check it out. And what's so incredible about tapping, just as an example, is not only does it give us a lot of insight into what is the emotion that my hand that right now I can't move, what emotion is it experiencing? But also we see that in brain scans, it actually calms down the amygdala, which is the fight or flight response. So it sends the signal to the body, you're safe, and it helps move that emotion out of the system. So it's very powerful. That was just like one of the many things I learned. And as I started to incorporate these tools, the system could calm down enough to a point where, like, I could get enough quiet to say, to reflect on, why did disease develop in the first place? What was going on for that little girl what was the lion for that little girl that created a breakdown in the nervous system that the system just couldn't sustain anymore that led to disease? And it took a lot. I had blocked most of my childhood. I didn't know that. Like, I suddenly was like, oh, I don't have a lot of memories from before the diagnosis. That was like new to me. I didn't realize that. And we're very good, especially I was a kid. I was very resilient. We're very good at giving our own meaning to things. I took that to mean that because my life had meaning from the diagnosis, before that, there wasn't a lot to get excited about every day. It's like, okay, business as usual. I took the lack of memory to mean that there just wasn't something as meaningful. I believe that that's true. And also it's true that I was living in a lot of trauma. And there was a little girl that was suffering, and the body just couldn't take it at a certain point. So I had to really do a lot of healing work from my childhood, and also had to realize, and this is the other aspect of the mind-body connection, the body's trying to help us. I had to realize my body actually helped me. And I had to acknowledge that. I had to really turn to my body and say, thank you. And say, wow, like I was in a tough situation and it was hard to see what was happening around me. And guess what? I woke up and couldn't see. So I was being protected, right? It took me a long time to see that. I think that's obvious. Nobody wakes up. I was like, oh, thank you. Like, I had to face that, you know? But I got to the stage where I could do that. Anyways, there's a lot to say on this journey, but But I think what's important to realize is that our bodies are not harming us. They're not working against us. And the healing journey really had to come from, we're a team. We need to work together. If I can see that my body is here to help me, if I can see that, oh, it's processing that because that's its job. It's supposed to have a reaction to this terror right now. Oh, okay. Then how can I help it? How can I feel my own feeling? How can I process that emotion so my body doesn't have to? That's kind of the overall. Obviously, there's a lot more detail, but yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
So I want to highlight something that you said about when you're focused on the problem, you can't see the opportunities. You know, once you started focusing on the positive stuff, the opportunities presented themselves. Like you'll hear me say that in probably 3/4 of the episodes that I do.
Yeah. But
like the analogy I always use is when you're on fire, you can't see the fire.
So
basically when you're just focused on the problems, opportunities are walking by you every single day.
Yeah.
And people aren't seeing them because they're so immersed in the struggle.
Yeah.
Whereas if you switch it to how can I get through this, not why am I going through this or why is this happening to me, it's how can I get through this. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think that's massive, and I totally agree. I also was in a very unique situation, in that for me, what could have seemed like being on fire, right, forced me to go inward because I could barely walk. I couldn't open my eyes. Basically, the first symptom I had was for 60 days, my eyes were jumping right to left. So for 30 days, my eyes were jumping right to left. And then I had double vision for the next 30 days. So it was nauseating to open my eyes. I kept my eyes closed. I was in my own internal experience. You know, this was back in the day. Couldn't like put on YouTube and any music you wanted. Like I was in quiet. Okay. I was in silence for a long time. We can put on the news with like 1,000 commercials. So not appealing. Okay. So I'm just thinking of the generation that's like, what is she talking about? Like TV commercials, like, yeah, guys, it used to be mostly commercials. So I had all this time to go in and to think and to reflect and to process. So you're right. If you're on fire, you can't see. But I had quiet somehow in that fire. I was forced into quiet. And so one of the lessons that I think is really important is we need to attribute meaning before waiting for hindsight. So most people will tell you hindsight is 2020. Now, after I went through the challenge, I can tell you how it affected me, how it changed me, the lessons I learned. Oh, I see now that I had to go through that. Well, I was deep in that without needing to wait for hindsight. I was looking already. What is the meaning? Like, there's a reason. There's a reason I'm going through this, and not my classmate and not the neighbor. And so I was already looking for a meaning. So by the time the diagnosis came 3 months later, it just clicked for me. It's like, oh, okay, there's a reason it's me and not someone else. And there must be something I'm supposed to share with others. There must be some way that I'm going to go about this that someone else wouldn't. And I didn't know exactly what that was going to be yet, but it allowed me to step into it and to be a lot more resilient, right? And to be a lot more present and have the bird's eye view while I was actually in it, while I was on fire, right? To use that analogy. So what I find really helpful, and I take clients through this a lot, is just imagine like a year from now, right? When someone's in it, when you're in the challenge, when you're on fire, we can connect to our higher selves. It's there at all times, and connect to the higher self and go, what lesson is she going to share later, right? What is she going to tell people about what she learned during that experience? And it's happening in real time. The job changes. We move, right? And you may not realize like, oh, well, because that happened, I had to take the kid out of school. And actually my kid's thriving now. I didn't even realize that. So there are things that we don't miss because of the fire. But if we can kind of forecast and go, what story am I going to tell about this? Then we get to write it. We get to write the story. We get to determine the meaning of it. And we get there a lot quicker than waiting, you know, the 4 years to then look back and go, oh, actually, that was the best thing that ever happened to me, which is what most people do if they do their work right later.
Yeah.
So I really do believe that. I think it's an important tool because you're right. Otherwise, you don't see it right now.
So I had a conversation just yesterday. I manage a gym, and at the end of class, I was speaking with one of the members, and now she lost three of her children. And so she has moments, of course, of sadness and you know, pain and stuff. So I'm talking with her and I told her, I was like, when you lose someone, like, you never, like, truly get over it. Like, you know, it's like, I watched my dad die. You know, it's like, I've accepted what's happened. But yeah, there are days where I miss him. I wish I could talk to him again. But in those moments, I turned to gratitude, right? And so what I said to her was, I said, right now, you're focused on loss, right? You're focused on the loss. I was like, what I did when dad died was, I'm like, all right, I had him for 45 years. Like, there were people who never met their dad.
Yeah.
You know, said, so I have 45 years of memories, teachings, you know, just pictures of me with him. Said, I have to lean into that. And I said to her, I said, you have to go through. I said, you can't change what happened, right? What happened happened, but you can change your outlook.
Yeah.
I said, go back. And I know this is easier said than done. I said, but go back and just get a notebook and write out as many happy memories that you can think of for all three of them. And lean into those. I said, because right now you're holding on to anger. Like, you're mad that this happened. And that anger is going to consume you. I said, and the one thing that can be anger every single time is gratitude.
Okay, so I agree, and you touched a big point for me. You're hitting home right now. You know, loss, ironically, is not something we talk about, even though it is the one thing all of us will experience. No one gets through life without losing someone. Everyone's going to die.
Yeah.
So this is, we all experience this, and yet we don't talk about it. And I'm really, really grateful that you're bringing it up. Before I became an illness recovery coach, I was a grief coach. And that came out of my journey losing my first fiance. I remember the anger. You brought up anger. Oh, I remember that. And I totally agree. Like, within minutes of getting the news, I immediately clung to gratitude. And I think that was because of how much I'd already faced, right? I already faced so much challenge that I knew that was a tool. Like, it inherently, it wasn't like intuitively, I was like, you know, wow, I'm so glad that I had the time I had with him. I'm so glad that in the last time that he was on earth, you know, that we were together, that he had joy, that he had love. So in that sense, I agree with you. I think that the deepest response to anger is forgiveness. Very hard to get there. And you're right. Anger does consume us. We have to be with it. Having worked with so many clients grieving, we have to face that anger. And, you know, going back to what I was saying, like, those emotions are in our body. It's our body's job to process it. If we don't, anger is toxic. We immediately see that the liver, we see an impact on, from anger on all the cells, but the liver is the first to take the hit. Just stops functioning. It's not going to process. So we have to acknowledge our anger. It doesn't mean you're walk around and pretend you're not angry, right? Like, good for her that she's real with how she's feeling. So I'll just share this practice. What helped me a lot in processing my anger, and there are many ways to do that, but what helped me a lot is writing letters. So I'm going to just walk everyone through this, if that's all right with you.
Right ahead.
Yeah. So here's the step-by-step guide. Okay, everyone. So you're going to first get a piece of paper, and at the top, you're going to start by saying, dear so-and-so. It could be the situation. It could be God. It could be the person that died. I know that sounds crazy. Like, you're not, how do you be angry at them? But that's natural. We need to be real with how we're feeling. So you write, dear blank, could be yourself. And you write all the anger, without qualifiers. We are, so we have been trained to like minimize our feelings. It's like, no, you're allowed to be angry. You don't have to say, I know you did the best that you could, or I understand that maybe I don't get it all right now. No. Use all your words. Mm. Be bold. Yep. Get your anger out. Get it out fully, completely. Then you read that letter to yourself. You tear it up. You burn it. We involve all four elements. Get it. Get rid of it. Okay. Don't keep that energy. Check in with yourself. Is there still anger? Probably. So his name was David. When David died, I would do this for hours. And once you start one, and this is how grief works. And I would, you know, maybe you could share if you're open to. Once we're grieving one thing, once there's a loss, it compounds. All the losses we've ever felt suddenly are connected. So it tends to bring up a lot. So sometimes people spend days in anger letters. And as you start to get through the anger, you check in with yourself. Am I still angry? And then the next question is there anything I can forgive? So maybe I'm only ready to forgive the hour that it happened, right? Okay. Okay, fine. I forgive you for happening at, you know, for this loss happening at, you know, this and this date and time. Not that it happened. Maybe you're not there yet. One piece. Again, you read it back to yourself. You rip it up. You burn it. Okay. And then we let the ashes go in water. If you guys need to throw it away, just throw it away. But what I'm saying is like, why? Because we are made of all the elements, and those, that anger, that emotion is in the body. We have to get it out of the cells. So I absolutely agree with you. And I have seen people heal the anger, the pain from their own child being murdered. So not something I would ever expect. I would never push someone to do that. But it is possible. That's what I want to say. Like, it is possible. And you're right. We absolutely have to focus on the gratitude, because the gratitude is also a portal to the reality that there's so much more happening in our lives than we realize. You know, it's not random that you and I are meeting right now. We have yet to discover that. Part of that is to share, you know, inspiration with the world, with people who are living through really serious challenges every day. That is the nature of life. And I'm sure there's going to be more. I'm sure you and I will find more reasons that we have to cross paths. Okay. That's just reality. Yeah. There's so much more at play than we realize. We don't know that, you know, the person who, like this woman, who, as soon as you said it, just like, I was filled with tears. It's like, I can't imagine that pain, and hopefully never will. Like, no one should ever feel that. We don't know if it, you know, in another reality, in another lifetime, you know, she was the one who was lost. And so she needed to experience this. Our souls want to experience the full gamut of human experience, which once we're here, we're like, really? I signed up for this? Like, it's a little bit too much. I changed my mind. This is a lot, you know? But we wanted to feel all of it. And there's just so much more than we could comprehend. So gratitude helps us get like a tiny portal into the reality that I don't even know what the reality is, that there's so much more than I realize. So I have to go, okay, look, I can't comprehend this. I can't comprehend it. And what am I going to grab onto? Exactly as you're saying, you're spot on. Is like, what did I have? What can I be grateful for? Thank God, you know, like I said, I'm so glad he had that time in his life with me at that, you know, in that moment. And you were, it's amazing what you shared. I had the chills when you said it. Like, wow, so many people don't have a father. We have to have the gift of perspective. That's the other piece of gratitude. It gives us perspective.
Yeah, I interviewed someone. This was, I think, maybe 2 years ago, his dad was killed in Vietnam while his mom was pregnant with him. So the only memories he has is pictures. So like, it's that exact situation where it's like, you know, I had my dad for 45 years. He was to all the sports things. He was at the spelling bees. He was at the parent teacher conferences. You know, like he was there for everything.
Wow.
You know, so, and he had a perfect ending. You know, he had a perfect ending. There were three generations of us around him.
Oh my gosh.
He passed right before COVID too. So we were all able to see him. It was November of 2019. And so like my mom played their song, like she's singing a song, like they unsedated him enough so that we could all say goodbye, give him a hug and a kiss, you know? So, so it's like, how can I be mad at that? You know,
that's so beautiful.
And the other part, right, add a little bit of comedy to it, is he would have totally sucked as an old man. Because my dad was an engineer. He loved to build. And he always said when he couldn't build anymore, that's when like he's like, that's it, no more. And so he was 79, and the day before he went to the hospital for the heart surgery, he and my son fixed my mom's car. So pretty much right to the very end, it's pretty much how he wanted it.
You know, it's like
he didn't want to live to be 90 and on oxygen, and like that just wouldn't have been good for him. So. You know, with everything else being said, even his ending was spot on. So,
oh my gosh, that's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. I'm like, that's like the vision, right? May we all go in that way. That's really beautiful. And it's so special that you got to experience that. My grandmother was also very intentional about how she wanted to go. And so she was on hospice and asked to be at hospice at home because she wanted to be able to have all her family member there. She had 30 grandkids at the time.
Oh, wow.
And we were all there, three generations all around her. We sang. It's just like, you can't, that's so profound. And, you know, clearly those experiences have, you know, played a huge role in you being the person, you know, to share these stories and bring this to light. And I think what I'm also realizing as you're sharing is, as weird as it is, because you would think with social media, like you would think in the world today, we have more access to just share humanity. We should have even more awareness of the human struggle, and that can always help us. But I actually think it's more isolating. I think it's why it's so important that you are, you know, doing this podcast and having people share their experiences, their challenges in such a resilient way. Because I'm realizing that if you don't hear that what someone else is going through, we just drown in our own reality. We're not able to see, like, oh, you know what? I would not ever want what that person is experiencing. Mm. You know what? Let me figure my way through this. You know, there's like, something about that.
See, one thing that I share a lot. Now, I'm a college dropout. Like, I don't have an educational background in this stuff. But I've been alive for almost 50 years, and yeah, I've been through some stuff, right? So it's like, yeah. I'm a self-taught life coach, you know, but that's I tell people pain is pain, you know, like when you get down to the heart of it, pain is pain. And there are steps that you have to take, whether you're 9 months pregnant, right? There's steps that you have to take every single day. Your feet are swelling, your back hurts, it's hard to breathe. You know, the kid could be stuck up under your rib or sitting on your bladder, right? Like there's a struggle you have to
go through. I'm feeling really seen right now.
Well, I have 5 kids.
Oh, there you go. Oh, beautiful. That's awesome.
Thank you. And so I tell people, it's like the origin of the pain, we get stuck on that. We get stuck on the what happened instead of getting the how did I get through this?
Yes.
Or how can I get through this? Like it's a daily thing. I mean, wake up today. How can I slay today?
Yeah.
And then you wake up tomorrow. All right. How can I slay today? And then you string those together. And then over time, you're going to have a firm grasp on that situation. But the biggest thing I told her, going back to the conversation I had yesterday, is I said, all right, so you have this pain. You can use it to propel you. Or if you cannot use it, and it's going to hold you back.
Totally.
I said, so again, like using this podcast, you know, we're sharing stories of pain to propel us and inspire other people to help them get through that pain.
Yeah.
Because again, if not, then that pain is just going to slowly eat away at you. And people are going to numb it, whether it's drugs, alcohol, pornography, whatever the outlet is.
Yeah.
But if you just accept what happened, right? What happened happened, and figure out what audience needs to hear from who can benefit from your story.
Right.
Now you're talking about it more, you're getting more comfortable with it.
Right.
And now you start to heal because now other people are depending on your story.
100%. Oh, I love what you just said. Like, that soothes my nervous system. Like, this is what people need to know. And to realize this is actually why we came. No one gets through life unscathed.
Yeah.
Everybody's going through something. Everybody. And you know, when you stay in that pain, it just grows. It just grows. I hate when people say time heals. I hate it. That's so disempowering. It's like, why would you tell me that? I'm just supposed to sit here. Like, we're just supposed to sit here and wallow. It's just, like, that's what, like, there must be something, there must be tools. There must, like, you have to be kidding, you know? And I think it's such a disservice to humanity that, like, psychology is even like started saying that. No, it's not true. And we know today, by the way, like, now research shows that as time goes, no, pain, especially grief, only spreads. It just gets bigger. It just starts touching more parts of your life. So
yeah,
no, you have to do exactly what you're saying. You're so wise.
Thank you.
You are. And I, by the way, I love what you said. Like, life is the university. I have so many degrees. I'm not using them. Let's just be clear. That is not what got me into my career. And that is not what has allowed me to help others. It is life. Okay. And we all came to use our challenges for others, to better the world, to raise the consciousness of humanity. And that's why no two people are going through the same thing. We have to take the steps that you're outlining so that we can then offer that to someone else, right? What I can learn from you, I didn't, because I didn't go through it, right? When I have got five kids, when it's time for number five, I'm calling you, right? Like, walk me through this. Like, tell me, what do I do first, second, third?
Well, four and five came together.
Ooh, okay, that's a surprise to go from three to five. That's
yep.
That's big. Okay.
We were joking about it too. Like, watch us end up with twins. Because I thought we were good at three. And then she was like, I think I want one more. I was like, really?
Did we joke about that? So now I'm like,
yeah.
It's all blessing. Yeah. It's all blessing.
Well, they're 15 now. So just when they were little, because I had a 2-year-old when they were born, and then a 6-year-old and a 10-year-old.
Wow. You know, what's interesting is, like, you know, as you're sharing, it's like, I've got one kid and so far, and I never knew that, like, love could feel like this. I never knew that you could experience this amount of joy. Mm-hmm. By the way, his name means to rejoice, like to increase in joy and laughter, which is
awesome.
Amazing. Cause that's him. That's just like, that's just him. We had to name him that. And I just didn't know, after everything I've been through, out of healing, I've lived through miracles. It's like, yeah, still doesn't come close to the amount of joy with him. And I'm just, as I'm hearing you talk about 15 years old, that's amazing. Just thinking, like, when you can experience the more we get, the more pain we live through, and the better we get at living through pain, not because we should, but just that's part of life. Okay. So as you're saying, we just let's be with what is. I think we have access to so much more joy. We get access to so much more joy.
Yeah, like I was pretty strict with my kids growing up. And like, now that they're older, because now, like I said, the twins are 15, my daughter's 17, my other daughter's 21, and my oldest son is 25. So now that they're older and they see that life can hit back, right? Life is going to hit back. And like, if I coddle you your entire childhood, when you get out there into the real world, you're not going to be able to handle it. That's why so many of these kids have like mental illness problems, because they don't know how to cope.
Yeah.
You know, so to your point, the more you struggle, the more resilience you build. You know, like last year was a struggle. Like, I literally lost everything. Like, I walked away from my own gym business. You know, just issues with my business partner. But the thing is I was mad at first. But then it hit me. I was like, you did this. It's like, you knew this was the path we were heading down, and you waited till you lost everything to take action. You know, but also if that didn't crumble, I wouldn't have landed here. So sometimes you do have to completely dismantle your normal to get to where you need to be. Because when I tell you, like, I literally had nothing. I was living in hotels for a few days before I finally humbled myself and called my mom.
My gosh, wow.
You know? Wow. But quickly, it's like once I took action, you know, I wallowed in pity for a couple weeks. But then I was like, dude, you host a show called Shut Up and Grind. Right? And so it was actually one of my guests, right? It was one of my guests that told me when she came here from, well, she came to California from Canada because she wanted to get into Hollywood. And she said she was just knocking on every door until she got a yes. So I was like, you know what? I was like, let me go up to the school and see if they need any help coaching track. And so all of that, I walked up, I asked, you know, starting Monday, I was coaching. And then getting back with the athletes, it relit my fire again. And so then I started working. I didn't have a car, so I biked everywhere. I biked everywhere till I saved up enough money, bought a car. Oh, you know, then I landed up here in this gym. Wow. And I have full control of the operation. Like the owner, and I asked the owner why. And he said it was the way you presented yourself. Because it's like I walked in that door and I owned it from the first day. And he saw that.
It's everything.
And so I just share that obviously I want to share the story with you, but for the audience as well, it's like what you're going through, take action.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Action can cure a lot of things. Like if I just sat there wallowing in pity, nothing would have happened. If I just would have been angry and blamed my business partner, you know, again, I would have kept myself in that fire.
Right,
but because I started taking action, doors started popping left and right.
Right.
Again, going back to what you said earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. When, you know, when we ask for support, it's all going to come for you. When we sit in victimhood, guess what? We attract what we are. We're just, the victim is just going to keep becoming a victim in all areas of our lives. Yeah. And look, it's not easy. I always say, give yourself a 5-minute pity party. You know, I, with all my resilience and all my wisdom and all my strength, and like when David died was like, oh, okay. I thought I was done with challenges. Like I thought I had like checked the box or met the quota or whatever. In that moment, I was like, oh no, this was all just preparation, you know? So that I could navigate this. Well, plenty of people face that without any prep, you know? So I have my pity parties. We all do. We give ourselves the time. You have to honor where you're at. But there's a difference between being real with where you're at, have your pity party, you know, go all in on the emotions and feeling bad for yourself. They're two different things.
Yes.
Feeling like this happened to me is just, you're never going to get out of that. It's just, there's no way out from that, you know, but knowing, okay, I'm going to give myself time to heal from this, to feel this. And I also know I'm going to get through it. And I also know that I'm going to grow through it. I'm going to grow from it, right? It's not happening to me. It's happening for me. And if we can train ourselves, we have to train ourselves on that in the small things so that when it is something huge, you know, that still applies. You can't get out of it. You can't be like, no, this is too big. Now this one is happening to me. No, it's also happening for me. And the only way I know that is because I said it 100 times yesterday on, you know, I was given the wrong cup of coffee or I was rear-ended, you know, whatever, God forbid, I don't need extra challenges in my life because I'm saying this out loud. But, you know, when we can say that in those tiny little things, then when the big things hit, because that is life, then we have a go-to. We've created the neurology for that, right? Going back to neuroplasticity, you created the grooves in your brain to jump to that thought. Now you're going to handle it completely differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. 100%. Time flies, man.
Yes, I know. I can't believe it. I just looked at the clock. We just started.
Yeah, like the gentleman I spoke with on Friday, he's like, I know 45 minutes is a long time. I was like, no, it's not. Like every time, because like almost everyone that comes on here, we vibe. You know, we buy, there's been a couple people that I kind of had to drag through the conversation, but for the most part, it's like we vibe, and then you, like you kind of forget this is like broadcasting and stuff. It's like we just get so immersed into the conversation.
Yeah.
But give us some final words. Let people know how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, sure. So you can definitely check out my website, kayleez.com. I love when people reach out to me on social media. I really do my best to respond. So that you could find me on Instagram, Kaylee Zaituni Official. Sorry, it's a mouthful. But we'll put that in the notes so that you don't figure out how you spell Zaituni. and on Facebook, Kaylee Zaituni. And you can also check out my course for anyone else living with chronic illness or symptoms. You don't have to have a diagnosis, and that's the ideal. I know we live in a time where medicine is confused. The closer they get to answers, the more confusion there is as well. And so for people just struggling and looking for an answer for clarity, you know, reach out. And I do my best. I can't promise this, but I do my best to always have a conversation with someone, even if it's not to work with me, just because I've been doing this long enough that sometimes I have an insight, you know, a direction that has nothing to do with my work and what I can offer. But, you know, a few weeks ago, I got a call from a young man who had been having headaches since he was a toddler. No answers, no directions, nothing. I was like, this doesn't sound like we need to do some like, you know, groundbreaking mind body exploration. Try magnesium, you know, like not medical advice. I'm not a nutritionist. Our nervous systems, your brain needs it. Just try it, see. And that was like after 8 months, he called me a few weeks ago going, I haven't had a headache since. So you just never know. If I have the time, I'll try to make the call. I don't do the call. I don't always have that time. But, you know, if you're struggling, I've been through it. I don't want someone else to struggle needlessly. I spent 18 years trying to find guidance. So let's try to end that suffering if we can. And that's how you can find me. And I just loved this conversation. This is for me, like this is life-giving. I want to have these conversations all day long. Like we're just in real life. And so to just also share, like people who are struggling right now, you're not alone. Just know that you're not alone. Keep listening to this podcast so that you have more inspiration. Just remember that we came here to face this, to overcome this, and you will get through it. You will.
Love it. So thank you for taking the time. Come out and share. This was an awesome conversation.
So fun.
Yes, and if you're just tuning in late, make sure you go back and watch the whole thing because, this is a solid conversation, especially if you're going through it, no matter what it is. If you're going through something, reach out. Hey, you're not alone. You got help. You got resources. So until Friday, shut up and grind.
You've been listening to Shut Up and Grind. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show. Robert has over 20 years experience pouring his knowledge and expertise at many events in the service and fitness industry, as well as secondary schools and universities. He has a true passion for helping others break through the barriers that are holding them back. To book Robert B. Foster to speak or to reach out, go to robertbfoster.com. Till next time, shut up and